This is Rain Hamcast number 57, posted December 25th, 2021 on therainreport.com and on the Rain Hamcast page on YouTube. It is voiced by Will Rogers, K5WLR.
When somebody says the month of October, we should see worldwide DX on 15 meters, but highly unlikely on 10 meters. But then we find a day or two where 10 meters is open worldwide. We scratch our heads and we go, but the model didn't say that would happen. Why did that happen? And we wonder if the forecasters are just losing their mind and they don't know what they're talking about.
That's the voice of Thomas Hood, NW7US, the author of many writings about space weather and effects of solar activity the past 20 plus years. Thomas has been a shortwave enthusiast since 1973, a ham operator since 1990, and is a United States Army Signal Corps veteran today. He launched the first civilian space weather propagation website, hfradio.org, in the mid-90s. HF Radio later spawned sunspotwatch.com. At press time, sunspotwatch.com is being revamped for the new Solar Cycle 25. Thomas has contributed to the space weather propagation column in CQ Magazine for over 20 years, and for the Spectrum Monitor since 2014. A product of the Pacific Northwest, Thomas resides now in Fayetteville, Ohio. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, spoke with Thomas recently about Solar Cycle 25. This is the second and final excerpt from their discussion.
When I first began hearing WWV, the hourly bulletin on solar and geomagnetic conditions, the indices, that report included three key indices that they would hourly broadcast. There are actually four indices, maybe five, that kind of count as what I, as an active amateur radio operator, would monitor. What we look at include the daily sunspot count. Then there's the 10.7 centimeter radio flux index. Those two are important. One, the sunspot count, obviously the higher that count goes, the more energetic overall the sun has become, and that in general gives us an overall idea of what sort of propagation we might find on shortwave radio. Namely, if I had 80 to 90 sunspots recorded, I would think that propagation would be low and that 20 megahertz on down would propagate reasonably well, especially 14 megahertz. But as that sunspot count rises and I see it go above 120 and up to 150, then I could expect the high bands, like 10 meters, to become very lively. And correlated with that is the 10.7 centimeter radio flux index. And that is a measurement of about 2.8 gigahertz or 2800 megahertz. And it's the signal level received with a antenna array pointing straight up toward the sun. That's taken several times during the day, and the max for the day would become the 10.7 centimeter solar radio flux index. Why is that significant? Well, the ionosphere becomes energized with more of the sun's energy. This 2.8 gigahertz signal is a proxy for the overall sun energy level. It's a good way to get a pulse on how much energy is being radiated from the sun as received, as it were, by the ionosphere on the sun facing Earth. So as the 10.7 centimeter flux level rises, obviously that means we're going to have an ionosphere being more energized. Hence, the higher frequencies will propagate over DX paths. Again, that's the sunlit side of the Earth that we're talking about. So radio frequency paths between two points on Earth that travel through the sunlit region of Earth, that's where the energy level will be maximized, and the higher the frequency propagated on that path. Nighttime paths, that level is going to go down, so lower frequencies at night will propagate. But overall, we see that the higher that 10.7 centimeter index goes, the better the higher frequencies propagate. The other indices used are the A, the planetary A index, and the planetary K index. Those are measurements of the geomagnetic atmosphere and its activity level. Interestingly, the more geomagnetic activity, the lower the ionospheric energy level will become, because geomagnetic activity counters the energy in the ionosphere. There's a physics behind that. The geomagnetic field lines run from pole to pole, from north pole to south pole. And if you remember looking at bar magnet experiments in grade school with iron fillings or any image that diagrams that, you know that there are magnetic field lines going from pole to pole across the equator, perpendicular. So these field lines actually pierce through the ionosphere. Well, if the sun has shot off an explosion of plasma, either by a solar flare or by a weak magnetic region on the sun, we call these coronal mass ejections. When a CME is shot out toward the Earth, if it intersects the Earth, it impacts the magnetosphere, which in turn will disturb the geomagnetic field lines, causing them to become erratic, move around in a very stormy fashion. That will cause a recombination of the molecules in the ionosphere, causing them to lose energy. The stronger the geomagnetic activity, then, the higher the planetary A index becomes, and every 3 hours, the K reading is read. The planetary K index, if that rises, we know that conditions might become more degraded on shortwave, meaning the maximum usable frequency over a given radio path can become depressed by as much as 30%. So if under normal conditions, I can work on 17 meters between myself and the DX, if the geomagnetic field becomes highly active or stormy, highly chaotic, then that recombination could cause 17-meter propagation to close down, but 20 meters might still be usable. Those are the main indexes, again, given by the solar terrestrial report that WWV broadcasts, 18 minutes after the hour is the solar terrestrial report, but also something that you can get on websites like the Space Weather Prediction Center's website, and by those indices, kind of get a good reading on what's going on and what we might expect in the coming hours on shortwave. I'm going to take just a sidestep for a moment and explain that when we talk about predictions of propagation on HF, the standard is the Voice of America, what we call the VIOCAP model. And that's a model built out of decades worth of observation correlating sunspot count, 10.7 centimeter radio flux readings, and actual propagation reception reports from all over the world of stations like the Voice of America. And they calibrate the model every so often to fine-tune the model to more accurately reflect what's forecast based on the numbers leading up to that forecasted period. So they, in retrospect, refit the numbers and tweak their model. So the model is based on an average that says, say, on 50% of the month, we expect propagation to be really good on 15 meters, but during 90% of the month, we don't expect 15 meters to be good at all, only 20 meters. And again, that's because there's a percentage of that month on which we expect daily propagation. Well, the higher that percentage goes in our model, the lower the frequency becomes, because we don't expect the higher frequencies to propagate every single day. So long term, public perception is, because most propagation forecasts are in the 50 to 70 percentile, we hear that 10 meters just won't be open until the very peak of the cycle. Well, they're expecting that to be 50% or better of the month.
You're listening to Rainhamcast number 57, posted December 25th, 2021. We'll conclude our time with ham radio author and space weather writer Thomas Hood, NW7US, after this pause for station identification. This is RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
This is the RAIN Hamcast, available both on therainreport.com and now on YouTube.
And An example of the beautiful shortwave conditions that can occur as a sunspot ramps up its energy level, the number of sunspots we see in the amount of radiation impacting the Earth from the sun as the sun's activity increases, is what happened this past Halloween. From the amateur radio standpoint, a lot of individuals noticed that 10 meters was wide open worldwide, and that's a really amazing aspect of an active sunspot cycle when it starts to ramp up and reaches its peak. Again, these upper parts of the spectrum on shortwave and even low VHF become highly energized and active. The end of the month of October, the 30th, the daily energy level rose significantly because we had an X-class X-ray flare on the sunlit side of Earth. In other words, from the sun to the Earth, when that flare erupted, it was facing Earth, and the energy, remember, it takes 11 minutes for sunlight, light waves, to go from the sun to the Earth. It takes 11 minutes to reach here. 11 minutes after that flare erupted, the Earth's environment changed. It changed for the better because that 10.7 centimeter radio flux has a proxy. That rose significantly, and that meant the ionosphere was bombarded with a huge increase in energy in the radio and light spectrum. That really energized the ionosphere, so much so that 10 meters opened up for worldwide propagation. So the more we have of these flares overall, that will cause a long-term increase in the 24-hour period of propagation. But during a flare, it can be that even on 6 meters or higher, we can have an hour or two of really exceptional propagation. Now, there is a counter to that. If that energy level rises too high, then the energy from the sun will penetrate down into the lower portions of our atmosphere, reaching the D region of the ionosphere, which is the lowest that matter in radio. The D region acts like a sponge to radio frequencies. The more energized that region, the higher the frequencies that are absorbed by that sponge. So if we have too much of a good thing, the lower frequencies will begin to shut down, and only the highest shortwave frequencies will propagate. Now, that could be also a good thing on, say, 6 meters when all of shortwave is shut down, but the 6-meter band opens up globally. That's happened in the past. So, lots of things to look forward to as this new cycle 25 ramps up and we see more and more of these flares. During the peak sunspot cycles, we can see back to back, like every 15 minutes, every half hour, flare after flare after flare. All sunspot cycles have those days during the peak years when we'll see that much Earth-facing solar activity. I've once watched 5 flares erupt within, I think, a 2-hour period from the same sunspot region. And boy, 6 meters was just popping with signals. NASA, the United States government, Canada, Australia, the European Space Agency, all of these different governments and governmental agencies have taken on the role of space weather forecasting. We even have a space force now in the United States. And the reason for that is because we have so much dependency on our satellite infrastructure that what the sun is doing matters. What the sun is doing every minute and what the sun might be doing in the next hour, 5 hours, day, 5 days, a week, we need to know these things so that we can take measures to protect our satellite infrastructure. So huge, huge amounts of money is being allocated to these agencies to do space weather research. And that means we're gaining a lot of understanding and the models are becoming better at forecasting what's going to happen with space weather. That's a huge win for amateur radio if we're going to do any kind of forecasting of our de-expeditions, when we should have our de-expedition, when we should change bands, etc. These huge increases in knowledge and modeling successes become vital to great planning for amateur radio operators. Now, to that end, because so many of these agencies are publicly funded by taxpayer money, they have to make the information that they gain public. So the Space Weather Prediction Center, SWPC, which is part of NOAA, they have a website. If you just Google SWPC space NOAA, you'll find the website that has these dashboards that are tailored to different users of space weather information, including radio users. And they have the data tailored in such a way that really give us the information that we can then say, oh, I know what's going on. I think that I can plan the next weekend instead of cleaning out the garage. I can be on chasing that day expedition because I know there's a good likelihood I'll be able to get them on 10 meters. Garage can wait. Those government websites, the Australian government has websites like that, the Canadians, European Space Agency, there are many websites associated with the different agencies. Also, as mentioned before, my website, sunspotwatch.com, is undergoing a complete overhaul for Sunspot Cycle 25 brand, better content, and more radio-oriented propagation forecasting. But that is a resource that's up and coming, so definitely bookmark that as well. Sunspotwatch.com. Of course, there's my column in CQ Amateur Radio Magazine and in the Spectrum Monitor. There's the column there as well. And I gave the Twitter information earlier that you can monitor. So there's a wealth of other private websites that have different takes on space weather, some of them from a climate standpoint, some of them from just astronomy viewpoints. There's a wealth of information out there.
And that's it for Hapali KC9RP Solar Discussion with Thomas Hood, NW7US, the man behind CQ Magazine's Space Weather Propagation column for more than 20 years, and the same for the Spectrum Monitor since 2014. If you missed part one of this conversation, you'll find it as Rain Hamcast number 56, both on the rainreport.com and on the Rain Hamcast page on YouTube. Rain Hamcast number 58 will post January 8, 2022. Hapali KC9RP edits and produces this biweekly ham radio podcast. It is copyright 1985-2021 Rain. All rights reserved. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit the Rain Hamcast in its entirety via amateur radio. Your support and feedback are welcome on the rainreport.com. Thanks for YouTube technical assistance from Tom Shimizu, N9JDI. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 and 44 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming.